now? I half expected Fiora to fire back with something sarcastic like, "No, Eugene, get them tattooed on your back, and then we'll talk." Instead, she nodded along with the other crusaders. Eugene revealed that the theme of this particular crossword was quite the mindfuck. Literally, the theme was mindfuck. With each theme answer, you had to change the first letter, the head, so that it worked with the intersecting word. So if the clue was dragon-related circus performer, then the answer would be fire eater, except you'd have to change it to tire eater for the word intersecting the head to work. Because the only thing weirder than a guy who downs fire is the woman from My Strange Addiction who ate rubber wheels. Mindfuck. So pretty much every theme answer was a lie? I asked. Precisely, Eugene said. Charles banged his head against the table in slow motion. Fiora and Stu exchanged spirited high fives. Eugene collected everyone's puzzle to determine the winner. Obviously, Stu. And me? I just grinned from ear to ear, thankful to this quirky squad for letting me in on their unadulterated fun. So, Fiora, Stu began. His voice had a shaky lilt to it. Not from nerves or anything. Stu was still soaring from his hotshot victory. He just sounded dorkily pubescent. Who is this friend of yours? Ah, gentlemen, this is Socket, Fiora said. He's in town this summer doing research for a professor at Georgetown. I brought him along because he's curious about our art. Stu's eyes narrowed, and Charles stared at me like I had something on my face. I broke the silence. I'm not a pro like you guys, but Fiora's been showing me the ropes. It was incredible watching you solve just now. What exactly is your, well, your method for solving crossword puzzles? Fiora said. Stu said. Method my ass, Charles chimed in. Well, Eugene said, you generally begin with a toehold. What's that? I asked. Just a fancy word for the first answer you fill in, Fiora said. It's pretty important, actually. It anchors the rest of the puzzle. The tricky part, Eugene said, is that often you will feel compelled to begin with a certain toehold because you believe it will reveal more answers. But it's more complicated than that. The surrounding clues may cause you to get stuck. Charles burst into laughter. What's with the chuckles, Chuck? Fiora seemed irritated. Hey, you can solve however you want, Charles said. I just find all this strategy talk to be a bunch of bull. I start where I feel like starting. If I get stuck, whatever, I'll save myself. Makes the process more exciting anyway. Charles and Stu broke into a side argument about toeholds, which for some reason involved Charles making fart noises. I whispered into Fiora's ear. This guy reminds me of you. Do not compare me to Charles, Fiora asserted. She pointed at him below the table. Adult, she said, then pointed at herself. Kid. She took a deep breath. I know what I am. People like Charles are delusional. That's the difference. Eugene stood up and clasped his hands together. All right, friends. Friends. Let us continue with our puzzle play. I'm sure Socket would like to continue observing. I agreed to participate in the next round, since it was supposed to be collaborative. Every group project has that guy who gets away without doing any work, right? It turned out that wouldn't be possible here. We were solving a meta puzzle, four mini puzzles that come together to solve an overarching puzzle. Only one was a crossword, and the other three were logic puzzles. Since there were four of us working on it, Charles constructed the meta puzzle, so he sat out. We each took one of the smaller puzzles. I picked the one with pictures because it looked easiest. But of course, everyone still finished their part before me. That was when it really got collaborative. Fiora, Stu, and Eugene huddled over my shoulders. What if we... one of them said. No, wait. Try this, someone else cried. We got through seven of the eight pictures. It was the picture-perfect model of teamwork. We were just stuck on the eighth picture. For a suspenseful minute, we all stared at it with intense focus. Eight brows furrowed, four brains working furiously, one mind-boggling image. Anyone who didn't believe puzzles made you smarter would have to be as delusional as Charles, who kept hollering random words like penis and appendicitis to throw us off.
Got it,
Fiora declared, taking the pen out of my hand, just like she did when we were constructing our puzzle at Tonic.
There.
We laid out the four puzzles next to one another, and together they spelled the solution to the metapuzzle. Hey, Fiora, let's elope.
God damn it, Charles,
Fiora said, shoving his arm.
I'll always be here for you, babe,
Charles proclaimed, making kissy faces. It is a running joke among our group, Eugene clarified, that Charles is, quote-unquote, in love with Fiora.
Not a funny joke, Fiora groaned. Can we just move on?
Maybe Fiora meant we should move on from the idea of the joke, but Eugene took it literally and fumbled with his paper stack. He pulled out another paper-clipped set of crosswords and passed a sheet to each person face down. He stood up to speak.
This next puzzle is particularly special, Eugene said. Will made it for NPL and has given us an exclusive first look.
National Puzzlers League, Fiora clarified. It's a big convention in July. Will Shorts is the crossword editor for the New York Times. He's like the Beyonce of our world.
The Crusaders all looked at each other eagerly, and without another word, they flipped the puzzle over and dove right in. Fiora immediately stuck her pen down on a box near the heart of the grid. She held it there for a few seconds. Would that word be her toehold?
Yes.
Yes, it would.
So, what did you think?
Fiora asked as we left DuPont Circle. After the last puzzle, Charles pulled out a bottle of what could only be cheap liquor, concealed in a brown paper bag, and offered plastic cups to the group. Fiora scrunched up her nose and made up an excuse for us to leave.
Who are those guys exactly?
I asked.
Day-drinking geniuses, Fiora said. They're cooler than you think, I swear. We meet up a few times a month to do puzzles together.
That's so cool. You guys were all so into it. I couldn't believe how detached you got from the world and everything.
Deep, Fiora teased.
Now, when are we going to finish our puzzle? I asked.
Ah, yes, our little boxy bitch.
Fiora tapped her fingers against her chin, like she was playing trills on piano.
This weekend's no good, since I'm going to Philly again to see my mom. She wanted me to visit for the fireworks.
I couldn't believe the 4th of July was already upon us. My parents would be back in less than 2 weeks. Philly is great for the fireworks, I said absentmindedly.
You sound like my mother. Anyway, let's jump back into our puzzle when I get back next week. In return, you can listen to me recap an entire weekend of passive-aggressive niceties with my new family. Do we have a deal?
I tried my hardest to resist smiling. It was like a balloon had swelled inside my chest, with little balloon animals pushing their way into my limbs. I wasn't just a distraction to Fiora anymore, but a real friend, worthy of the details of her life. If she was a jigsaw puzzle, the image was finally beginning to come together. I was getting a semblance of the full picture. I checked my phone. It was almost 9. I had to run to Professor Mallard's.
Deal, I said.
The faintest smile slipped out the edge of my lips. Chapter 22. When one door closes, another opens. Apparently this rule applies to girls, too. Fiora may have left town, but Jeanette was still around, and I had almost forgotten about our coffee date. Not that I was really feeling it. After early morning crosswords with the Crusaders, a full day of research on Mandela, and 2 nights in a row working at Tonic, I'd had enough of this truly long weekend. But America's birthday was upon us, and Jeanette, patriotic as a tacky American flagpin, would not be spending the day alone. I agreed to meet her for coffee on Sunday before the fireworks. We picked a spot called Bourbon Coffee. Well, Jeanette picked it. I replied with a quick smiley to end our conversation. Does it still count as a conversation when the ratio of texts received to texts sent is 11-1? Bourbon Coffee was located just south of DuPont Circle. On my way over, I passed an abandoned fenced-off yard with a dilapidated red sign hanging off the side. Caution. Watch dogs. It reminded me of the caution, aggressive crane sign back at the zoo.
Scott!
I heard Jeanette's shrill exclamation as soon as I stepped into the coffee shop. She was sitting at the table closest to the door, naturally. Jeanette wore a white polo, navy Bermuda shorts, red flip-flops, and a starry ribbon in her hair. She looked like a limited edition American Girl doll. She also looked nervous.
Hey, Jeanette, I said. How have you been?
Wonderful,
she said. We both kind of widened our eyes. 11 unanswered texts did not translate into wonderful.
So, she began, it sounds like you had a busy week.
Oh, man, you wouldn't believe it.
Do you want coffee?
She interrupted. We got in line and ordered. I paid for Jeanette's coffee because I felt bad about the unanswered texts. Jeanette sat down and took a big gulp of her extra hot cappuccino. She puckered her lips and raised her brows. I wasn't sure if she was reacting to her drink or nudging me to fill the conversational void.
How was your Sunday?
I asked, changing subjects.
Good, she said cheerfully. I went to church this morning, and the pastor gave a really lovely sermon on reconciling technology with our faith.
Church, technology, sexting. Without realizing it, I snorted. Jeanette shot me a look that I hadn't seen on her before. It wasn't admonishment or shame like I'd expected.
I suppose it is funny, she said.
I searched Jeanette's face for a clue to this apparent humor.
This is our fifth date.
Of course Jeanette was keeping track.
And we still haven't talked about religion.
Do we need to talk about it at all? I said carefully, doing my best to tiptoe around what was evidently an important subject for Jeanette.
My mother and father firmly believe it should be the first conversation on any date, Jeanette said. But my sister Frankie says I shouldn't bring it up, ever. I told you about Frankie, right?
I crossed my feet under the table. My eyes got shifty, and I pressed my thumb deep into the center of my left palm. Until this point, I'd been a pro at limiting my interactions with Jeanette to mutually agreeable subjects like zoo animals, Smithsonian museums, and making out. I took a big gulp of my iced coffee, and in a surprising turn of events, Jeanette perked up and shed all her nerves.
I grew up with 5 sisters. I can't believe I never told you that. I'm the youngest, and Frankie is the second youngest. Frankie dropped out of Liberty after a year and moved to Brooklyn, where she plays in a folk band. They're actually quite good.
Are you and Frankie close? I asked, genuinely curious about this seemingly cool person and how she could be related to Jeanette.
Best friends, always.
Jeanette's words were clipped with assurance.
Although it doesn't mean I drop my faith like Frankie did. 2 summers ago, she read Dawkins, and just like that, she decided Christianity wasn't for her anymore.
Jeanette paused and took a deep, deliberate breath.
Are you religious, Scott?
Well, technically speaking, Jeanette already knew I was Muslim, thanks to Fiora. No need to bring that up again. I'm not very religious.
But Fiora says you're Muslim.
Ish, I said. A long time ago, I asked my parents what religion I was, and I accepted what they told me. Haven't gotten around to reevaluating it or whatever.
Would you ever consider converting?
To what?
Christianity.
I gave Jeanette a look that said, are you serious? She let out a defeated sigh.
What is it with our generation's fear of religion?
Jeanette spoke intensely but quietly, like she was reasoning with herself.
I saw it with Frankie when she converted to atheism. I see it in my research reports at FAT.
It's worth noting that Jeanette said the individual letters, not the word.
Fundamentally, she continued, you have nothing to lose with religion. You've taken economics, right?
I quasi-nodded, bobbing my head in a circle. It was a tactic I developed every time Jeanette asked about my classes at GW.
So you know all about opportunity cost, Jeanette said, jutting her shoulders and straightening her already straight back. It's the idea that when you're faced with a choice, there will always be a cost associated with not choosing the other choices.
Why are we talking about this? I thought, and the words almost slipped out.
Logically, I'm better off in the long run with my Christian faith.
I'm sure you are, I said quickly.
It minimizes my opportunity cost, she exclaimed with delight. I keep my parents happy, who believe for their own reasons. I keep God happy. I keep my community, my morals, my values. There is absolutely nothing to lose.
Jeanette's eyes had grown to the size of golf balls. As she gesticulated her hands with acute awareness, I remembered that this girl aspired to be a lawyer one day. She kept going.
And in the unlikely event that God doesn't exist,
I felt my phone vibrating in my pocket. Jeanette was wrong. There was a God. He had blessed me with an escape. I answered without looking at the caller ID. Hello?
Sake Junem.
My heart sank. Call number 2.
Hi, Maman, I said.
Who is it?
Jeanette mouthed.
Sake John, salam.
Hi, Dad, I said, looking directly at Jeanette. She nodded and mouthed, oh. For such an intelligent girl, you'd think she would have picked up on the Farsi word for mother.
Socket, what is this high and dad business? Farsi Hafizan, you're speaking too much English lately.
Okay, Maman.
Ozarjun, let the boy speak whatever language he wants to speak.
But if he doesn't speak Farsi, he's going to forget.
Maman and Baba, I'm out with a friend, I interrupted.
Oh, how nice, Mom said. Is everything at home all right, Pesaram? Do you have enough money? If you need more, we can have Majid drop some off.
Yep, everything's fine.
Scott, about your internship, Dad began.
This was it. He knew. I didn't think it was possible, but Dr. Mehta must have told Dr. Sen, who told his wife, who told my dad. How could I have been so stupid? Of course they would figure it out. My parents had warmed me up to take me down, an over-the-phone execution in front of Jeanette.
Are you enjoying it?
Those were not the words I was expecting to come out of his mouth. Those were not the words I had ever expected to come out of his mouth.
I think so? Actually, I don't know. It's early to tell, but I'm trying to be gritty about it. I'm trying to be gritty about my internship. I think you'll be impressed.
That's good, Dad said, as if he were still pondering this new concept of enjoyment. The rest will figure itself out.
I looked up at Jeanette. She'd finished her cappuccino and was tapping the weightless cup against the table. I need to go, I told my parents. My friend is waiting.
Okay, Sake John, Mom said.
Dad cleared his throat. Mom spoke.
Ah, yes. One more thing, Socket. I don't want to worry you, but Baba Bozorg had another heart attack this week.
He's better now, Dad said quickly.
The doctors say he's recovering very well. They'll run some tests. After all, it's the second one this year. And continue with his cardiac rehab, and
he'll be fine. Dad had had enough.
I'm sorry to hear that, I said. I wanted to press further, even if I wasn't very close with my grandfather, but I knew better. For Iranians, sensitive matters are like terms of service. Check the box to acknowledge what's necessary and move on. You never read the fine print.
Inshallah, he stays healthy,
Mom added.
Inshallah, I said.
I couldn't say for sure, but I was fairly certain I caught Jeanette wincing out of the corner of my eye. I said goodbye to my parents and turned back to her. It means hopefully, I clarified. Inshallah, God willing, is the direct translation.
Fantastic, Jeanette said. Now, as I was saying,
so what?
Excuse me?
I was saying that in the unlikely chance that God doesn't exist,
so what?
I'll have lost nothing. There is no opportunity cost. Inshallah,
you know, she smiled. I sighed. That's great, Jeanette. The National Mall was predictably packed for the fireworks, but as a party of two, Jeanette and I were able to claim a small patch of grass without much problem. As soon as we sat down, the fireworks inside my head went off like the bursting reds, blues, and oranges over the Washington Monument. I wondered about Jeanette, who was so assured in her beliefs that she knew exactly how to shoot down the skeptics. Wouldn't that be nice? Not to question your identity every second of every day, but to simply know. I wondered about Fiora, who in that moment had to be questioning every piece of her identity, her parents, her relationships, her mental health. Yet, despite these variables, something about Fiora felt steadier than Jeanette. The fireworks suddenly became more intricate. Greens, indigos, pinks, pink hearts, multicolored starbursts. My favorite was the fizzling gold streamers in the foreground during the grand finale. The sky had filled with smoke by the time the show ended. Families picked up their picnic blankets and left. Jeanette and I both had work the next morning, so we kissed goodbye on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. On my way back to the hostel, I thought of my parents, and finally, I wondered about my own situation. What was left of my time in D.C.? The string of lies I had woven only kept getting longer and longer, and the odds that my parents would actually be impressed with this new internship felt slim. I had betrayed their trust. That probably tipped the scale. In fact, it struck me that they wouldn't just be angry, they would explode. It would be unlike any punishment I'd ever seen. But even if they dragged me home from D.C. and grounded me for life, I could keep up my grit research. I'd still have these experiences. Week 3. Chapter 23. He plays the kazoo, Socket. How am I supposed to come to terms with that? I was laughing so hard my sides were beginning to cramp. It was Monday evening, and Fiora and I had reconvened on a bench in DuPont Circle. I sat upright, and Fiora lay perpendicular to me, her legs propped up on my lap. Aside from that minor flaw, it sounds like he is not such a bad stepdad. Fiora drew her lips in and nodded. Mom found a good one, she admitted. He's not even, like, too nice, you know? Sometimes step-parents are dicks, but it's almost worse when they make it obvious that they're trying to impress you. Franklin is just the right amount of cool. And your half-sister? She's two. She was literally clapping and dancing to the fireworks all of last night. Don't worry, though. She's got plenty of time to piss me off. Sounds like the perfect weekend. It wasn't so bad, yeah. Fiora stretched her arms out, reaching for the sky. She wiggled her fingers at the ostentatious sunset, a flashy spectacle of grapefruit pink and sweet nectar orange that dyed the entire skyline, one-upping the previous night's color show. There were hardly any clouds in sight. We studied the sky carefully for a few moments, until Fiora dropped her legs to the ground abruptly and sat up. I brought you something from Philly, Fiora said. Picked it up from the station this morning. I hope it's not a miniature Liberty Bell. I have so many of those that I've thought about turning them into teacups or shot glasses. Fiora handed me a folded piece of newspaper. I paid for it in Philly, but you could say it's from New York. It was a crossword puzzle. Ripped out of the New York Times, and in tiny bold letters at the top right corner of the grid, by Fiora Buchanan. I stared at the flimsy gray paper for what had to be a full minute. I could have said, I'm so, so proud of you. I could have said, this is an incredible accomplishment. I could have said, congratulations. You are a freaking beast. Fiora bent over and buried her face in the palms of her hands, laughing. You know, that's exactly the sort of review I was going for, she said, coming down from her giggles. Unfortunately, neither of us had a pen on hand, so I promised Fiora I'd work on her puzzle later and finish before the next time we hung out. I can't believe I know someone with a crossword puzzle published in the New York Times. Now, if you could work on publishing an article... Fiora punched me in the ribcage. I fell over on my side, pretending to be hurt. Fiora pulled me back up, and we sat straight for a moment. My dad texted me this morning, she said gently, almost surprised, like a carrier pigeon had delivered the message, and not her biological father. He still does the Times puzzles, you know. Anyway, he said he was proud of me, that Grams would have been proud. My body warmed up with happiness for Fiora. A gust of wind passed, though it did nothing to ebb the tingly sense of delight I was feeling. I realized it was getting dark. I placed my hand on the small of her back. That's great, Fiora. During the rest of the week, I found confidence in familiar places. I found confidence in solving Fiora's New York Times puzzle, even if it took 3 hours and 26 minutes. I found confidence in paying back the hostel for a few more nights. I found confidence in my steps on M Street each morning. The route to Georgetown had become second nature to me, like a house I knew well. My eyes grazed over the same candy-colored townhouses, and I cut across the same campus lawns, and I opened the same wooden doors at White Gravener Hall. All things considered, I felt more grown up than ever with my daily routine. I found confidence in the lives of Marie Curie, Steven Spielberg, and Thomas Edison, who overcame sexism, rejection, and 10,000 failed attempts to invent a light bulb. They all made it in the end. I found confidence in working with Trent behind the bar. Weeknights were slower at Tonic, so we passed the time by telling stories about our lives before DC. Trent got a kick out of my escapades with Jack and Kevin, like the time I tricked them into showing up at a real party, complete with loud music and alcohol, by pretending it was a Star Trek viewing. Trent told me about life growing up in Charleston, how for him it revolved around the church. Trent may have been gay, but he was still Christian. He couldn't shake off his faith. We agreed that religion, like friends, can take on many forms. Thursday night, I presented my finished puzzle to Fiora at Tonic. I pointed out the corner where I'd gotten stuck, and she was proud that I pushed through. We got right back to constructing our puzzle, and here my confidence skyrocketed. Fiora and I filled about 80% of the grid before calling it a night. We would fill in the rest over the weekend. I decided that I wouldn't worry about my parents anymore, who would be back in America the following week. Even if grit didn't save me from their wrath, even if I was sentenced to spend the rest of my days counting staples in my bedroom, it would all have been worth it. Dear Professor Mallard, Happy Friday! Today my research focused on Khalid Hosseini, one of my favorite authors. He wrote The Kite Runner and is Afghan-American, making him one of the few popular writers who actually looks like me. I was surprised to learn that Hosseini wasn't always an author. He went to medical school and was a doctor for more than 10 years. When he was writing The Kite Runner, he would wake up at 4 a.m. every morning to crank out new pages before work. Khalid Hosseini's family moved to the United States when he was 11. They sought political asylum after the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. His father went from being a diplomat to a driving instructor, and his mother took a job working the night shift at Denny's. They lived off food stamps. Hosseini says he became a doctor to ensure his own financial security, because his family, despite their struggles, sacrificed everything for him. His story bothered me at first, but then it gave me hope. It's never too late to take over the steering wheel of your life. Everything works out in the long run. My findings are attached. Sincerely, Scott Ferdosi. Chapter 24. I always had a feeling that I wouldn't be very good at breakups. My eighth grade girlfriend was the one to break up with me. We'd lost our spark, she explained over IM, and the jury was still out on my on-again-off-again fling with Annie Choi. It wasn't my style to reject the people I let into my life, whether they were telemarketers or girls I'd picked up at the National Zoo. But this week, I decided enough was enough with Jeanette. Our last date had been a disaster. The texting was getting out of hand. I asked her to meet me at Bourbon Coffee on Friday. Scott! Again with a shrill exclamation. Jeanette was sitting at the same table as last time, dressed professionally in a purple frilly blouse and a black pencil skirt that sufficiently covered her knees. Hey there, I said, my eyes flickering like broken taillights between the table and Jeanette's face. How was work? Jeanette lit up.
It's been so rewarding, Scott, she gushed. I've been working on a pamphlet all week about the urgent need for more stay-at-home mothers.
I knew I couldn't jump into it right away. Not that I was capable of a quick and clean breakup anyway. I'd have to entertain Jeanette's right-wing chatter until I could segue into those callous words, "We need to talk."
Our generation's obsession with equal rights, equal pay. It's nice, but don't you think we're taking it too far? Jeanette asked.
Oh, sure. I guess you could say that.
Exactly, Jeanette shouted. We need to talk, I flinched, about families. Everything shouldn't be about what women need, but what their families need. Kids need their mothers. Husbands need their wives. They need their full attention.
But don't you want a career? I asked, remembering the girl who said she planned to attend law school one day. Isn't that why you're in college?
Jeanette looked at me sweetly. Well, of course I want to work. Where else will I meet my future husband?
She may have been joking, but I didn't laugh. Her face turned straight.
Look, I understand my views are more traditional than most people our age. But I've thought it all through, really. I want to experience things while I'm young, just like you and Frankie. That's what this summer is for. It's just, at the end of the day, I know what I want as an adult. A family. I value that more than anything else. I want a happy, traditional family.
On one hand, I was astounded by Jeanette's total rejection of all things modern and feminist. On the other hand, though, I couldn't help but respect her. She had her life mapped out. I envied that.
What do you want, Scott?
Jeanette asked, her expression filled with genuine interest.
Do you want to keep studying psychology? Get your PhD and teach?
I laughed. I have no clue. I mean, maybe? I'm doing grit research. I'm bartending at Tonic. I'm here with you. I even got into crossword puzzles lately.
That's so interesting, Jeanette exclaimed.
I came up with an idea. In fact, I said, I have one on me.
Oh, can I see?
I pulled the puzzle out of my back pocket and slapped it on the table. I grinned with a cocky sense of pride. There's this metaphor about crosswords, Jeanette interrupted.
I used to love doing crossword puzzles with my mother when I was... Oh, you're constructing a crossword. That's so neat, Scott.
She looked at me with eyes that made me regret this idea immediately. Eager eyes that saw no boundaries. I had let her get too comfortable with me. I want to... talk, I stuttered. Our grids, the intersection, it's not... Jeanette wasn't listening to me. She pulled a pen out of her purse.
You should insert an interesting first name in here, Jeanette said. A modernist writer, because that would appear quite crosswordy. Virginia Woolf!
Before I could object, Jeanette scribbled in Virginia. Oh, yeah, I said meekly. That's wonderful.
And here you need a four-letter word that ends in R. How about rear? You could come up with a fantastic clue for that. A blank admiral, or the trunk of a car, or perhaps even...
Jeanette blushed and giggled.
Oh, God. Was she making a sex joke?
I felt paralyzed. Jeanette was molesting my crossword puzzle, the one I'd started with Fiora. My plan to segue into the flaws of our intersecting grids had failed. I lost track of time. Had 5 minutes passed? 10? 45? Words kept coming out of her mouth and falling onto the puzzle. I nodded robotically the whole time. Then I snapped out of it, snatching the puzzle out of her hands. Let's go for a walk, I said. I led Jeanette toward DuPont Circle, hoping that we could find a bench where I could breathe and spit the words out. I don't want to see you anymore. 7 words. No, even shorter. It's not you, it's me. 5.
Better yet,
we're done. 2.
I should have thought through my plan of action. Instead, my mind kept wandering to Fiora, and how I would explain to her that Jeanette had violated our crossword. Sometimes the universe takes the exact thing that's on your mind and puts it right in front of you. By this logic, I shouldn't have been thinking about any person at all. I should have thought about $1 million, or a mega mansion. Lo and behold, Socket! What had seconds ago been eclipsed by a mammoth tree revealed itself to be none other than the Crusaders, sitting at their flimsy plastic table. They were not solving crosswords. Instead, they wore different colored party hats. Stu's was green, Eugene's was periwinkle blue, Charles was pink, and Fiora's had Happy Birthday written in cursive.
Oh! Hi, Fiora!
Jeanette squealed. She looked around and then twisted her face consideringly.
Who's Socket?
I noticed Eugene was about to speak.
It's my nickname, I blurted.
Fiora rolled her eyes but preserved her smile. She seemed to be in a happy mood. Hey, is it your birthday? I asked.
It is not, Eugene said. We are celebrating a milestone far more important than birth. Fiora's debut crossword puzzle was published in the Times this week.
The Crusaders instantly broke out in a syncopated applause. Fiora blushed. These guys are too good to me, she said, resting her hands on Eugene's and Charles's square shoulders.
Goodness! Congratulations, Fiora!
Jeanette clapped, her jaw practically touching the grass. She nudged me.
Scott, perhaps our puzzle will be next.
Your puzzle?
Fiora's smile faded.
Scott is working on his own crossword puzzle, Jeanette explained. We were just working on it together. It's almost finished.
I couldn't place the exact emotion Fiora's happiness was morphing into, but the transformation was palpable. The Crusaders noticed, too, and became fidgety.
Show her, Scott, Jeanette added.
I looked at Fiora desperately, apologetically. I was already begging for forgiveness. Eugene shot Stu a questioning glance, who bounced it off to Charles, who looked left and right, and then stared at his feet. I planted my hands into my pockets. I did not take them out.
Let me see it, Fiora said, forcing a smile.
Fiora was not happy that I was making her bring out her poker face, especially in front of the Crusaders. I handed her the crossword. My shoulders tensed up, sending a chill down the back of my neck as she scanned the sheet of paper.
So, you guys are what, boyfriend-girlfriend now?
Fiora's tone was prickly, almost mad.
Getting married already?
Jeanette and I answered simultaneously,
No! Are you crazy?
Jeanette said, looking truly horrified. Fiora and I glanced at each other quickly, then turned to Jeanette.
Huh? I mean...
Jeanette grew frazzled. It didn't help that Fiora was staring her down intensely.
Scott and I aren't serious, Fiora.
I glared at Jeanette. What do you mean?
I mean... Gosh. Don't you remember what we talked about last Sunday, Scott? You're a Muslim. I'm a Christian. My parents wouldn't approve, and they would cut me off, like they did to Frankie, and...
Jeanette spoke these words matter-of-factly, as if it was common knowledge that Muslims were a special, holy, undateable breed.
Don't get me wrong, she said. I like you as a person, but you must be able to acknowledge that we're worlds apart. We could never be more than a summer fling.
Fuck you, Jeanette, I thought.
The Crusaders had gotten up during Jeanette's hyper-rationalized bigotry and moseyed over to a distant bench. The bench where I should have broken up with her.
Well, that's delightfully open-minded, Fiora finally said, the fakest smile slithering across her face. Who could you get serious with, Jeanette?
Trent? Jeanette giggled.
That's not such a crazy idea, she said. Trent is a handsome, conservative southerner. I'm sure my parents would approve.
Trent is gay, Fiora said, totally deadpan. Jeanette's eyes shot wide open. She might have even gasped.
That's... I'm very sorry for him.
Seriously? I packed so much judgment into that one word. Scott, surely as a Muslim, you don't approve of that lifestyle. Fuck you! Fiora spat the words at Jeanette and stormed off. I stared at Jeanette. Did you know about Trent, Scott? I took two deep breaths and looked down at my hands. They were clenched tight, the skin bunching up around my knuckles. We're done, Jeanette, I said, shaking myself into motion. I need to go. Trent was right about Jeanette. She was crazy. She was racist. Most of all, she was a bigot. You couldn't help people like that. I sprinted back to the Hanover hostel. I had no plans to go chasing after Fiora. If it weren't for Fiora, I never would have met Jeanette in the first place. I bit down hard on the inside of my lip. I failed to draw blood, but nerves flew through the roof of my head. As much as I wanted to blame Fiora, I blamed myself more. I wasn't going after Fiora because I couldn't look her in the eye without feeling like I had messed everything up. I should have seen through Jeanette. I bit down harder, setting off fireworks inside my head. Stop thinking. Start doing. I paced around my hostel room. My vision was blurry. At some point, the Colombian girls I had shared the room with that week tiptoed around me and left. I felt lonely and vulnerable, like when I boarded that Greyhound bus nearly 3 weeks ago. Stop thinking. Start doing. Just when I was figuring out my puzzle, I had to jump and throw all the pieces in the air. Start over, or start another puzzle. That was always my theme. Stop thinking. Start doing. But what? I remembered the metro bus stop down the block, the one where I had hopped on for an impromptu tour of D.C. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to run away again. I let my quarters clink into the fare machine and took a seat. We passed the same landmarks as last time. The payphone I had crashed my bike into, Ford's Theater, the Spy Museum, Union Station, hair salons, and chicken joints. Then we reached a run-down neighborhood, Stadium Armory. No stadium in sight, though. I tightrope walked along the edges of sidewalks and wandered into convenience stores, wasting away my Friday night. I passed gangs and drug dealer types, mostly minding their own business. I might have caught a few drug deals in action, shady handshakes, men drinking mystery liquid out of brown paper bags. Midnight came and went. I found myself outside a bar called Trusty's, where drunk men and women trickled out in pairs, slamming the broken door open, laughing carelessly, and hailing cabs to go home and partake in acts I didn't care to think about. Eventually, I snapped out of my own daze and checked my phone for directions back to the hostel. In a perfect world, I would have hailed a cab. But for some sad, consequential reason having to do with the day's events, I wasn't convinced I had earned that luxury. In a perfect world, I wouldn't have been alone on a Friday night. And certainly in a perfect world, I would not have dropped my phone after being pushed into from behind. Hey! I yelled. What the hell? Stumbling past me was a freakishly tall man with green frosted hair. He stopped in his place and turned around in slow motion. He looked me up and down.
Fuck you, he slurred.
I picked up my phone and noticed the screen had shattered into a web of cracks. Seriously? You broke my phone! This man stared at me, dumbfounded. His eyes demanded that I cower in the presence of his massive frame. There was a long scar above his right eye that trailed down the side of his face. Despite my fear, I stood tall. He huffed.
Fuck you, he said again, shoving me this time. You fucking terrorist.
I froze up.
Hey,
he said, slurring the non-existent syllables. Drunk. This man was absolutely drunk, and he was not pleased with my non-response. He pushed me harder.
I'm speaking to you, fucking terrorist.
I started pulling away when the man whipped his arms back and snapped forward, clinging around my small frame like a crane.
Let me go! I screamed.
A group of three teenage-looking girls were standing outside the bar, and I turned to them and pleaded,
Excuse me! Help!
They watched uncomfortably for a few seconds before scurrying away. Assholes. The man dragged me down the block.
Fuck your phone! I'm gonna beat the living shit out of you, he said. I will fucking kill you!
I tugged and jabbed, trying my very hardest to escape. He was too strong. I didn't want it to end like this, in a sketchy neighborhood with a green-haired Aussie. Alone. Friend count, zero. The man dragged me halfway down the block, gripping my t-shirt. I could smell the liquor on his breath. I prayed for him to pass out in his own vomit, or for someone to see us and call 911. But the street was empty. Just before turning the corner, he stopped to cough, and I seized the opportunity to slip out of my t-shirt and break free, shirtless. The whole maneuver confused us both. It was drizzling. The rain trickled down my trembling body. I was so grateful to be alive. I sprinted for blocks to prove it, and then I hailed a cab. Chapter 25. Saturday morning, I made up my mind that I would not go home. Not yet. I had every reason to call it quits and run away from D.C. I was almost killed. I'd pissed off Fiora, and my parents would be back from Iran in 4 days. But I wasn't ready to give up. I throttled the idea before it even had a chance. Somehow, I had lost my phone. I must have dropped it while the drunk Irish or Australian man was dragging me down the block. No device, no friends, nothing to do. I lay in bed the rest of the day, on my back, on my side, on my face, staring at walls and the ceiling, and nothing at all. Chapter 26. Drip, drop. Drip, drip. I peeked out my window to confirm the sound of raindrops. It was supposed to downpour today. I felt restless. I hadn't eaten anything for more than 24 hours. I didn't have any way of checking online or texting Trent, so I took a chance and walked over to Tonic. I was drenched by the time I arrived.
"Welcome to Tonic," said the guy behind the bar.
It wasn't Trent.
"Hey,
oh. Hi there," I said. I recognized the bartender. It was almost like looking into a mirror. I knew his full name, address, zip code, and organ donor status.
"Can I help you? We're opening in a few minutes,"
Carlos Zambrano said. I smiled. "You've already helped me a couple times."
"Is Trent around?" I asked.
Carlos's face lit up. He must have just made the connection between us, and something more. There was a twinkle of concern in his eyes.
"Trent's not in today," Carlos said. "Are you Scott?"
Yeah, that's me." Carlos reached into his back pocket. "Here," he said, extending his arm. It was a letter.
"This girl came by yesterday morning to see you. I told her you weren't around. She was furious, dude. Crazy. She screamed like an insane person. Scott, Trent, they're going straight to hell. She stormed out of here and came back an hour later with this."
Carlos dangled the letter like it was a flaming piece of shit. I snatched it, my heart racing.
"You want any food or drink, man?" he said.
Could Jeanette have done something to Trent? Was this a breakup note? Could either of them have tried texting me since Friday night? I collapsed onto a bar stool, sliding my elbows down the bar top until my chin was resting on it. My stomach grumbled. I felt wholly inoperable, drained by anxiety and hunger. A burger would be great.
"Dear Socket, I consider myself a decent and open-minded woman who is driven by her values. Godly values, like honesty, respect, and appropriate behavior. Recently, I've learned that you don't live by any of these values. I could not believe the text I received from you Friday night. Your confession was nasty and outrageous. I couldn't even look at myself knowing that I had been hanging out with you blindly for over a week. I couldn't forgive myself for being such a fool. But I wanted to understand your side. My faith has taught me to be forgiving, understanding, and so I wanted to give you the benefit of the doubt. I came into Tonic today to speak with you like an adult, Socket. I wanted to understand the true nature of your relationship with Trent. A part of me even wanted to help you. When you weren't there, I got very irritated. Then I got smart. I went home and did my research. I Googled. I checked the white pages. Facebook. I learned who you really are. You are a liar, Socket. I know your real name isn't Scott. I know you're in high school. Do you know how embarrassing that is for me? Thank the Lord I didn't stray so far as to break the law. I never would. I also know that you were never really employed at Tonic. I called the restaurant's management office and informed them that an underage person was working behind the bar. They didn't even have your name on record. Isn't that funny? I informed them that you were a friend of Trent's, and they assured me that they would take care of the two of you. It would be a shame for the restaurant to get slapped with a lawsuit. In conclusion, we are done. It's not like we were ever serious anyway, but I am purging the idea of you and your ungodly friends from my mind. I'm not sure what business you had in D.C. or why you even approached me at the zoo, but I have no desire to be a part of it. I hope you find a way to live with yourself. Praying for you. Jeanette. I sat there speechless for God knows how long. I was waiting for a sign, someone to explain the words I just read. The Sunday brunch crowd started to form, ebbing and flowing around the bar, enviably carefree. I hardly took two bites of my burger. I felt sick to my stomach. Half-baked theories rushed through my head. Who had texted Jeanette on Friday night? What did they tell her? What had happened to Trent? Was he okay? Did Fiora have anything to do with this? A part of me believed that she did. The conflict reeked of her touch. A mess not unlike my cycling accident. The whole thing was rooted in Fiora. It had to be her. Remember how the universe sometimes takes exactly what's on your mind and places it in front of you? I didn't learn my lesson the first time, so instead of a train or a bus to take me back home, I got Fiora rushing through the door. "Why aren't you picking up my calls?" she said, exasperated. "You weren't at the hostel, and you're not answering or texting me back." I stared at Fiora, scanning her face in an effort to understand what she was doing at Tonic, without asking explicitly. "Hello," she said, waving her hand in front of my face. "Trent got fired. Jeanette is furious. She sent you a text saying she took care of you. The girl is crazy, Socket. Do you know what the hell is going on?" "Hold on," I thought. I jerked my head just slightly. "Do you have my phone?" "I don't," Fiora said. "So, how do you know that Jeanette texted me?" Oh, geez. Fiora rolled her eyes, but it wasn't in her usual mocking fashion. She had something to hide. "She didn't text your phone, Socket. She texted mine, thinking it was you."
"Why would she think that?"
"Look, I can explain. Remember at the zoo?" My eyes grew astronomically wide. I stared at Fiora with a livid expression, the kind of gaze you fire off at a stranger who spills on your laptop, or a friend who knocks over your house of cards. "What have you done?" Before Fiora could begin to answer, Carlos approached us. "Hey," he whispered, "I think you should take this outside." Fiora marched straight out of Tonic into the summer rain. I tried yelling at her to stay under the awning where it was dry, but Fiora wouldn't stop walking. I ran up and grabbed her by the shoulder. "Hey!" I shouted. "What the hell is going on, Fiora?" Fiora turned slowly. Raindrops splashed around her face, bursting at the moment of impact like water balloons. They slipped down her forehead onto her probing eyes, her lush lips, and they soaked her hair into thick strands of rope. I usually despised wetness, be it sweat or salt water or rain, but in that moment, I couldn't stop myself from smiling. Here we were, Fiora and I, afflicted by the same natural form of shittiness.
20 days ago, we didn't know each other. Fiora, Trent, Jeanette. I had never met any of these people. I ran away to D.C. with the sole goal of meeting Professor Mallard. Here I was, 20 days later, facing a shiny new web of problems. Fiora, I repeated, calmly this time. What happened?
Friday night, she said, her chest rising and sinking with each deep breath.
Fiora closed her eyes.
I was home alone. I had a couple glasses of wine. Just a couple, okay?
Sure.
I was so angry about earlier in DuPont Circle. The horrible things that Jeanette said about you and Trent. I felt angry with myself for setting you guys up in the first place. Forcing you to meet her, and inviting her out with us that night at St. X.
I wiped my eyes, rain, not tears, and nodded. Can't say I disagree.
And I was pissed about my mom.
I'd emailed her my Times puzzle, and you know what she wrote back?
Oh, I didn't know you still did those things.
Maybe she congratulated me somewhere in the email, but the point is, she didn't do the goddamn puzzle. And clearly, I remind her of my dad now, and...
Fiora closed her eyes again, and shook her head and made a face that admitted she was running her mouth off track. So she backtracked.
I got tipsy, right? And remember how I texted Jeanette at the zoo pretending to be you? Remember that? So, Friday night, I thought, what the hell? Let me mess with this cold-blooded bigot a little. I texted her. I texted her mean things, Socket. It was supposed to be a joke. I didn't think she'd actually do anything about it.
I wanted to shout at Fiora, just completely chew her out. I was fuming, but I controlled my anger. I let myself feel the rain dripping down my arms, keeping me calm.
What exactly did you text her?
Fiora shook her head.
It doesn't matter. It was stupid. I made up stupid things about you and Trent to piss her off.
Apparently enough to get Trent fired, I shot back. Do you understand that, Fiora? Jeanette sabotaged him. He lost his fucking job because of her. Because of me. I couldn't stay calm knowing that a good person like Trent had suffered for his kindness. For helping a foolish person like me. Most of all because of you, Fiora.
Okay, okay,
Fiora said grudgingly. She ran her fingers through her wet, unwieldy locks of blonde hair.
I'm sorry I meddled.
Somehow that wasn't enough. That's it, right? You're sorry? You move on. I shook my head. That's not how it works for the rest of us, Fiora. Trent's going to have to find another job. I'll probably go home. Even Jeanette.
We really hurt her.
Oh, fuck Jeanette, Fiora said.
Jeanette,
she repeated, with a thick, mocking French accent.
You didn't even care about Jeanette.
Who are you to tell me what I do and don't care about?
Fiora opened her mouth to speak, but froze. She turned her back on me.
This is your fault, Fiora, I said.
She flinched.
You know, Trent never officially got you that job.
She looked at me out of the corner of her eye.
He was paying you out of his own pocket.
The pit in my stomach grew heavier. It slipped into the crevasses of guilt.
Why would he do that for me? I asked slowly.
Fiora turned back to face me.
Because he's a good person, Socket. You were desperate.
We locked eyes. Fiora gave me a terrible, hopeless smile.
I am the desperate one?
I clenched my fists and tightened up so much I thought I'd burst like a tea kettle.
I'm not the one who had a mental breakdown because her boyfriend broke up with her. I'm not the one who does crossword puzzles because...
Because what?
Fiora said.
Because you're desperate to escape, I said, forcing the words out. From your own reality, or whatever.
Fiora threw her hands up, laughing like a maniac.
Here we go, she said. We have achieved peak irony. The runaway is telling me I'm desperate to escape. You want to hear about reality, pal? You came to D.C. chasing after this thing you really wanted, grit. But the more I see you, the more I realize you're doing it all wrong. You're obsessed with the future, Socket. You're obsessed with tomorrow, when the only shit you have control over is today, right now.
That's hard to believe, Fiora.